And welcome to our show, Geeks Are Red Podcast, where we're talking about video games, movies, TV, comic books, technology, and TLDR, the Internet of Things. I'm your host, Bill, and this week we have Anthony.
Hello.
And Stephen.
Howdy.
And you can contact us by emailing us at geeksarred@gmail.com or sending us a voicemail or a text message to 801-896-GEEK. Or 801-896-4335. And I will read the text message or the email. If you want, right online. If you have a question, we'll answer it here.
That's beautiful.
You also help support us at patreon.com/geekswire. You get the podcast early. You get the Geeks Are Wireless episodes.
Yeah, those are secret episodes, like top secret. Like you can only listen to them if you're a Patreon subscriber.
Yeah. So, I kind of want to talk about actually the T-Mobile thing.
Let's do it
first. So the T-Mobile and Sprint merger, this actually happened a little bit ago, like last week. Yeah. Like I think it happened like after we recorded last week, the all officialness and everything. I was kind of hesitant on like, is this finally, because there's been a lot of that talk about it, but yes, it is finally. And I'm glad I'm on the people who purchased it side.
What do you mean? So is it like they're merging their companies or just this 5G deal?
No. T-Mobile bought Sprint.
So this is a big deal then.
Oh yeah. And even with all the lawsuits they were going through, they all basically got thrown out because Sprint was going to fail. Basically, that's why the T-Mobile was allowed to buy them, is because Sprint was in such bad condition. They were like, no, you need to be bought because otherwise you won't exist anyways.
Wow.
Yeah.
So,
and how did that come about?
Well, they've been trying to buy them for like, actually probably this might have been going on for like a year.
Huh.
I feel like it's been a couple of years.
Or a couple of years, yeah.
So with the 5G combining thing, Sprint's gonna, like, the Sprint phones aren't gonna work, like the 5G Sprint phones. Yes. They're not gonna work after a little while.
Like I said, I'm glad I'm on the people who purchased it side.
Yeah.
Wow, so they're gonna just stop working?
Well, the 5G parts, they're gonna stop working, but even for phones like the OnePlus or the iPhones that can work on both the low and mid band that T-Mobile mm-hmm. will own, there's apparently ways that they can like turn them on, but there's going to be by a case by case basis, or they're basically going to try to get them all to buy T-Mobile phones.
Okay. Wow. That's insane, man. That's a big deal.
Oh yeah. But it'll be nice to have
say on that article though, that it's just combining the 5G networks in Philadelphia and New York City.
That's where they're starting.
Oh, okay. So this is going to take place over the next year or so.
Yeah. Well, they did buy them. They're going to start shutting down the Sprint side of everything. They're going to start making sure the networks will talk to each other without any issues. So these are the big ones to work with.
I see.
Because we all have Sprint and T-Mobile around us. We just need to not break it.
That's nuts.
Mm-hmm. So, and it'd still be nice, like I said, having both the mid and low band, it will means your 5G will work through your walls for both of those, and sometimes a little bit further, but the speeds are not going to be like Verizon, where they're like, oh, we have the fastest 5G. Yes. Uh-huh. Unless you can't see the tower. And you're within like 60 feet of it.
Oh, is that how it works? Because the farther the way, then it starts slowing down.
Well, the high band that like Verizon has that works really, really well. They're super fast. They're amazing, but they don't go through anything and they don't travel very far.
So they have to have
while the low band travels. Say again.
Yeah. I was just going to say, the high band, the only way you can have good coverage on it is you just have to have a lot of antennas. And even then, it's not going to, like, it's only going to work outside. So.
So in relation to how it works just normally, like right now with the 4G stuff, you know, how my phone gets on the internet and is able to download apps and stuff like that. Once we get 5G, what's going to be like the average increase? Do you know what I mean? Like, I understand that they're toting that if you're really close to the tower or whatever, you get these insane speeds, but what am I really looking at? Like, what's the average increase that I'm paying for or whatever?
For the low band, and this might be the reason why T-Mobile isn't charging to move to 5G, T-Mobile's low band is you're probably only going to see like 10 to 20% increase in speed. It's nothing grand.
Okay.
The higher the band, the higher up the band, like Verizon's, you can get up to 28 to 30 gigahertz. And they, let's see, was it? With the mid band, you can get up to 2.5 gig.
Uh-huh.
Is that right? The 2.5 gig is what Sprint currently has. But I believe you get upwards of like 100. Is it 100 or is it 50 gigs? So, you know, the higher bands work really great, but they don't travel far.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, I just don't. I don't know how, like, we're going to notice the big difference unless we have a tower right in the middle of our city.
Well, that's, and even then, you have to be, like, right next to it.
Yeah, so, like, that's what I mean, is, like, I don't understand how it's going to really affect me personally. Like, even if I get a 5G phone, like, my phone does fine on the internet and stuff when I'm out and about, I feel like, but, you know, with this 5G, everybody says how much faster it's going to be, and they spat off these big numbers, but it's like you have to be right next to the tower. Well, what's it like just normally? You know what I mean?
So with 4G, the tops off is theoretical 100 megs per second. 5G okay. tops off at the theoretical 10 gigs a second.
Okay. But I doubt like my phone has ever gotten 100 megs per second, right? I mean, really, unless I'm right next to one of those towers.
I think the only time you got 100 megs per second was whenever 4G was brand new.
And there wasn't a lot of competition.
Yeah.
Reduce the competition with it. Let's see. I do a speed test right now. Let's turn off my Wi-Fi because it's been okay, but there's better. It works.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the Wi-Fi 6. Let's see, but I'm in the basement, so with my 4G speeds, it is, my download is, oh wow, an amazing 5 megs.
Okay.
And I almost have a half a meg upload. This is what happens when you're in the basement.
So really, it's just going to be all over the place.
Again.
I get 4 down.
You got 4 down?
I was going up to 5, kind of.
Ooh.
The upload is way bad.
Like I said, I'm a half a meg upload.
I got like 0.1.
Oh, wow.
And it's just going down. I am in my basement, though.
Yeah, all of us basement podcasters.
And I had a 75% packet loss rate, so that was cool.
Oh, yay.
That sucks.
So, but like I said, that's the grand of the grand. And so upgrading to 5G now where they're starting to cross over and there's starting to be phones that can take multiple bandwidths or bands to jump on. It might not be terrible, but I would not go out and spend $1,000 on a cell phone just because it has 5G.
Just because it has 5G. That's a good way to put it. And that's what I was kind of leaning towards. Like, is it worth it to just be like, you know what? I just bought my phone last year and it has 4G. Should I just jump right into buying a new phone for a grand and just to have 5G?
No. And there's not even a reason to spend that much. You have the OnePlus that's coming out. Yes, there is the top one for $1,000, but I don't think you need the top one.
I do.
No.
I like to take pictures of the flora changes.
Nah. What if
you're building proteins to cure COVID-19?
Oh, but just get a Raspberry Pi for that. They're good for that now.
Good for what?
The folding at home that you brought up all those weeks ago?
Yeah, but Raspberry Pi wouldn't be good for that.
No, they got so many now that people are actually using Raspberry Pis for this instead of these super machines. They have so many people putting in, they actually are starting to hit numbers that they never actually expected, and people are able to walk in with these teeny tiny computers instead of these giant beasts now.
Well, I never really understood the concept of these folding proteins. I don't understand what they were accomplishing with that.
They're just simulating protein folding, and I don't know exactly what that does. It's just that's what you're doing, though.
And I guess if you just simulate it a bunch of different times, you get different binding sites or.
Yeah, like, I haven't looked at it, and I'm not very much in the know on the whole medical stuff. But to me, it just sounds like you're folding proteins, you're simulating what two different proteins would do if they were to connect or if they were to pass by each other. Like, would they connect and cancel each other out? Would they connect and just do something completely different or what? That's my understanding, but again, I could be completely.
I don't even know what they're really talking about in that.
So what you also can do with that is you're able to represent that. That's you have like quantum computer type thing. You're able to represent multiple scenarios. So everyone does a little bit of the scenario to bring it back in, and there's all of the possibilities it can go through. And then when there's 100 different possibilities of this thing to go through, you're able to also look at what are the chances of these things to go through. You start being able to give it percentages. You start being able to use a lot of this information to truly estimate how things can work and what can be used and all that.
That is cool. That is really neat. I mean, that takes just so much time, and that's cool that people are doing it. Like, because I'm guessing that you're offering up your services to do that, and then you're uploading it to some database that they're
basically using.
You're basically allowing access to your processing power. Wow. And so many people started getting into it. That's why I said the Raspberry Pi started coming around doing it. And that's like the idea of blockchain with like the cryptocurrencies. You're solving equations to unlock this information.
Very cool.
The PlayStation 3 had that built in. You could actually offer your PlayStation graphics card up for scientific research when you weren't using it.
How does that work?
What do you mean?
Like they just are able to connect through it through the internet and use it?
Yeah, so it will be bandwidth. It will be, yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. That's a concept that they're using for like streaming video games too, right? Like having just like this little tiny box that streams the information, but somewhere off site, there's like these high powered machines that are actually powering the games that you're streaming, right? So you don't have the hardware in your house. Is that like the same kind of concept?
To a point, that's more of the because you're able to compact it down and stream it to your computer. Uh-huh. But it's supposed to. You need low latency. You need the lower the latency, the better. Because if we can get within 5 milliseconds of latency, they were saying it's as close to as real life.
Yeah, you know, that's a thing that I actually did my doctoral presentation on was the history of robotic surgery. And like, you guys have heard of like the Da Vinci surgical robot, right?
No.
Nope. That robot that like is like a laparoscopic it's basically a laparoscopic device that has like 4 or 5 arms on it that go into the body. And then the surgeon sits at a different console and controls the arms while looking through a stereo 3D scopic scope.
Oh, no. Okay.
He moves it and stuff like that with the controls, but it's basically like able to take your hand movements and, you know, tone them down to these really fine motor movements of these fully articular instruments. So the reason why they did that, why they invented that in the first place, was to help soldiers like overseas, or to have a surgeon in safety at a hospital be able to operate on a soldier that was far away, like in the hot zone, mm-hmm. so that you're not putting that many people at risk here, at least, you know what I mean? You could do it remotely. But that's one of the things that they found, was that to send that information, you had to have that 5 millisecond or less. I think it actually came up to higher, though. I mean, I have to look at the paper that I wrote, but I want to say that it was closer to like 11, to where if it was past that, then it was just impossible. It just didn't feel.
It wasn't
that,
you know, close enough to real, you know, to exactly. actual vision. Yeah.
Exactly. Which, you know, I remember that when I gave that presentation, all these kids, the medical students and the residents there were like, well, why isn't that possible? Like, I don't understand how hard that is. We stream high definition video. And I'm like, yeah, here's the problem, though, is high definition video is packed. It's done. It is not happening mm-hmm. in real time. It's not processing anything. You know, Chris Evans just jumped off that building and threw his shield 2 years ago when they were filming it. You know what I mean? Yeah. But if you're trying to get something uploaded in real time, it's having to process all that information because it's creating a stereoscopic 3D image. So that's why, like, it would take an insane infrastructure to get that off the ground floor. Now, it can be done, and it is being done, but it's not being done on like a super large scale. Mm-hmm. So like the surgeon's not at home hopping out of bed and getting on his Da Vinci console. And then the nurse calls him and is like, hey, we're all docked and ready to go. Can you see? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? It's not like happening like that every day.
So you mentioned, you asked earlier if it was the same, like the streaming thing was the same as the folding at home stuff. And I would say it's probably the exact opposite. Like instead of... Really? Well, it's just because, like, the concept is when you're streaming a video game and it's being processed on a remote computer, like, it's the same idea, but kind of, like, it's just reversed a little bit, just because they're sending out everything to you to do the computations, whereas when you're streaming, you're connecting to a central server, which is doing all the computations. So the roles are just reversed as well.
I see. Yeah, because you need a nice computer to do it at home. So you're the one they're just using yours mm-hmm. on a larger scale. I see what you mean. Yeah. So it would be the opposite. It'd be the exact opposite. The hardware would need to be like somewhere else.
So, yeah, the concept is the same. It's just the roles are reversed. And that's all.
Interesting. Yeah, I wonder if that's going to be, I mean, I imagine that really what it comes down to is that's where, I think anyway, video games are going to end up going, is those kind of streaming services. And right now, like I was talking about, you know, that Xbox Game Pass that I have on my PC. I mean, that's a great way to do it in the sense that, you know, you're not streaming the game. You're paying for a subscription and you're downloading it from them. But if you don't have the membership, it's not going to let you play it, you know. But and that works for right now, for sure.
But also, once we end up getting, you know, like super low latency on all this, that's where the augmented reality stuff is really going to start stepping in. Like you'll be able to literally like go out on a walk through a national park or outside. And as you're looking around, you're like, oh, that tree is this, or I can mm-hmm. like identify things in real time mm-hmm. or even like interact, like have these boxes or have these like virtual assistants that follow you around, and they're actually able to look at things, kind of almost like Sword Art Online when, you know, they bring her out and the fairy out into the real world mm-hmm. for the daughter.
That's cool. That'll be interesting when that stuff kind of comes out. In my specialty, our biggest thing is, so I work in pathology and one of the things that, and I worked in radiology too, but the big thing is being able to, you know, access a lot of stuff off site. And so with like radiology, it's kind of easier in the sense that sending those types of pictures, I guess, if you just want to like real simply call them that, pictures mm-hmm. to different consoles off site. I mean, that's very doable. There's a lot of teleradiology jobs where a radiologist stays at home and reads, you know, from a special monitor and stuff, that special equipment that he has at home. But with pathology, it's different because you're looking at these microscopic slides, and the slides need to be scanned in such a way that you have, you know, up to like 1,000 magnification on them. So like one slide file turns out to be like gigabytes, you know, tons of gigabytes of information for one, because it's not just one picture. It's like all these pictures scanned together, you know what I mean? Versus radiology, which is essentially a 2D image still, you know what I mean? It's even like when you think of a CT scan, it slices, but they're still not highly graphical. There are software programs that you can get to make them better, but at the base, they're not super big files, but the pathology files are really huge, and that's one of their biggest hiccups. Right now, we just basically use that technology in academia. We take some certain, you know, cases, and we scan those slides and then make, you know, presentations about how we arrived at certain conclusions and stuff.
Nice. So when I was talking earlier about how much computing power ended up being put in, so because of all this, people are actually providing little bits of computer, and all these mini computers have topped as faster than the top 500 supercomputers combined. The collective power, they are at 2.4 exaflops.
Whoa, what is an exaflop?
It is a very big number. It is 50 more times more powerful than the world's most powerful supercomputer, which is the IBM Summit.
Which is...
Wow, that's insane. That's cool that all these people stepped up to do that, though. I mean, that's got to help, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they just need people to use that technology, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine that making vaccines is not an easy thing. And like, I was reading an article that I got about COVID, and now, you know, from its first appearance in China all the way up till now, they've actually isolated 30 different strains of it. So it's mutated that many times at least already that we know about.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was mutating.
Oh, yeah. And 30 different strains. I mean, that's why now we're starting to see, oh, here's new symptoms that could be associated with COVID. You know what I mean? There's like one strain that is able to just like overwhelm you with, you know, the numbers of viral copies. And there's some that aren't as potent, you know what I mean? And creating huge viral loads, like it's not as severe, but then there's like two or three of them that just cause insane amounts of viral load very quickly. So that right there is going to make the vaccine a lot more difficult. And I think that, you know, they're probably not ready to talk about that in a public, you know, forum, because it's kind of complicated. It's like, what do we do now? Because it's not just one COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, is it going to be more like the flu shot, where, you know, the flu mutates so fast that every year that it has to be like kind of like this hodgepodge of four or five, well, like three typically, flu strains, like a trivalent or quadrivalent vaccine that we get for flu. That's what I'm guessing that they're going to do. You know what I mean? That it's going to have to be something like that.
Yeah. And the other thing is, it's so dangerous. So I hadn't heard that it had actually started, you know, evolving as much. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, it's kind of scary actually, because this is the new, that explains why it was kind of like, we were still doing research on how bad is this.
Yeah. And I think that's really why, you know, a lot of people just don't know some of this information, and I don't know if it would help. Do you know what I mean? Because people are just like, no, we should just get back to the way things are. But it's just still kind of scary, man, because it's not that there's definite. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, this is definitely going to be so super kill everybody type of thing. It's just that there's too many unknowns.
Yeah. And that's why
the biggest thing.
Worried about the idea of going back and all that is the I would rather more people, more testing, I guess, happening, but it's just, it's a lot of work.
Yeah. I was, you know, watching some of the news stuff, and I guess Mayor Giuliani kind of said some interesting things about, you know, the investigations, like they want to do these investigations when people test positive to see like, okay, who have you interacted with? Who have they interacted with? And those types of models overseas have been so useful. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? That's why how they've been able to contain it so quickly. Because once you get to the end of that, you know, investigation, you can quarantine those people for 14 days. I can't remember. I think it was New Zealand is super good at that. And South Korea has been super good at that. And I know that, you know, you talked about, you know, them hiring, you know, freshly graduated medical students like me, mm-hmm. We're doctors now, but you know, we don't hold a license in any state yet because we haven't started our residency. But that kind of work, I feel like we could do that kind of work as medical students, you know what I mean? And fresh doctors is be on those types of teams, you know, if we got paid to go out and investigate those types of things. And that would be kind of like, if you had that extra workforce, like that could be what you could put them to work doing. And, you know, of course you definitely need to give those people a break that are on the front lines right now too. Don't get me wrong, but mm-hmm. you know, it'd be kind of a way to utilize those resources. Cause you know, Giuliani was saying, well, if we're going to investigate COVID, then we might as well investigate heart disease. And we might as well investigate, you know, lung cancer or cancer patients. And you know, that's kind of a two-dimensional way of looking at it, in my opinion, just because heart disease, why we don't track heart disease? Like, well, why don't we investigate stuff like that? Well, there's a pretty easy answer to that. Heart disease is not contagious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if Anthony has, you know, high blood pressure and high cholesterol, and I'm a super healthy person and Anthony coughs on me, I'm not going to have
high blood pressure.
You know what I mean? High cholesterol all of a sudden. So that's the thing, is like the investigations come for something like this that is contagious, that it spreads so quickly, so that you can let those people know or get those people, you know, some experimental antiviral treatments, you know, even something like Tamiflu that they're still trying to see if helps. And, you know, those medications aren't for sure to help. You know, but at least you can quarantine those people so quickly. You know, mm-hmm. You tested positive in the last week. Where were you? Did you travel outside the state? No, I went to the grocery store. Okay, how many people, you know what I mean? Like, you could trace it back.
Well, that's why Apple and Google were starting to do the tracking. They're actually going to push out an update to everyone's phone, but you have to opt in. That's the number one thing. They're not going to, especially in the US where we care about our privacy and people watching us and all that stuff. But so Americans opt in.
They could track it. They could track it if you got sick. See, I don't think that's a horrible idea. Do you know what I mean? And I'm all pro freedom and stuff like that. But right now it's just kind of a weird time. And that information could be very useful. You know what I mean? It really could. Because I don't know, sometimes, man, like when you're in that situation and you're sick or whatever, you don't want to sit there and talk about all that stuff. So it'd be nice to be like, I don't remember, man. I know I went to the store and I went to here. Well, hey, let's check your GPS on your phone. Okay. Mm-hmm. You went to this grocery store and you went to this gas station. Okay. Can you tell me about the people that you met? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
types of deal. So.
Or the contact tracing. So they're going to use Bluetooth off of it. So you'll be, that's how the phones will be some handshakes between phones for this. But I think a lot of people, what there were, like, they, people would love to do this.
Uh-huh.
But the problem with a lot of, you allow the door to be opened.
Yes. And see, that's the thing, man. It's like, I totally get that. I totally get that argument. So it is, it's just a big giant gray area. But, you know, these other countries have been doing just that without that technology. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? They've just been straight up doing the legwork. And it's definitely proven to be effective.
Yeah.
You know, if six people came to our city right now, you know, and this COVID was just starting and six people came here and they tracked those six people to wherever they went in the last couple of days, you know, since they got to this city, you know, and they quarantined everybody necessary, I don't think our city would have a problem. Do you know what I mean? Like, I really don't, because everybody's been quarantined and everybody's gotten it. And, you know, with the stay at home orders now, granted, you know, like not letting a ton of people come in through airports and stuff like that, because then you're just going to have to keep up with it. And that's why I understand the other argument too, that the United States isn't a small country. So some other countries might have a lot easier time doing this than we would.
And that's why they're allowing the state by state. So states will be able to control about, you know, access or what it is. And that's why there's also the, you know, a lot of the states that are turning things back on aren't just like, everything opens tomorrow. It's no, we're going to do, there's the three phase approach. So you, okay, do this. Okay. Did it increase? Did it decrease? Did it stay the same? Mm-hmm. Are people actually following the rules?
Yes.
And you know, tell somebody they can't do something, you're going to want to do something. You know, yeah, I get that.
I do too, man. And it's just a tough situation that we're in altogether. I just hope, you know what I mean? And that's the thing. It's like, I don't think a lot of people realize that, you know, doctors and people that are so super cautious, we're so super cautious, man, because we don't know. And we're taught that we don't do anything until we know, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We don't give you medications unless we get tests or unless you show symptoms, you know what I mean? We're not just doing things really. We really are trying to help. So like when people, now I get a question a lot, you know, is hydroxychloroquine like the answer? And I haven't looked at all of the research, but you know, it's like, we don't know, man. You know, that's the thing. It's going to take time. It's going to take trials. And what works, I think the success stories hurt us more than anything, because you hear about one person getting better from one of these drugs that they're trying, and you think it's just going to work for everybody. And that is just not the case. There could be so many factors affecting that. And so I think that, you know, people think that doctors are just not, you know, they're just waiting and they're just sitting on their hands. And it's like, yeah, we are, we're working, you know, it looks like we're sitting on our hands, but we're working at trying to figure out these problems so that we can say for sure. Mm. We don't want to say, you know, like, yeah, that'll work, just take that, you know, because we don't know. We really don't.
Yeah. And more research needs to be done. And that's the biggest thing with a lot of this is we need more research. But I'm going to move on.
All right.
To something else. Not COVID-19. I'm going to move on to OnePlus Z phone.
Okay, so that's a phone then.
It is a telephone, a mobile cellular device.
So what's so good about this? Is it a flat display? Are they all flat displays?
No. Actually, OnePluses have curved edges.
So this
is more like
a huge difference.
This is like everybody else now.
Oh, but this flat one is like gonna come. Oh, I see. So this is just like a mid-level or something.
Yeah, this is their cheap phone. Okay, they're kind of cheap. Well, they just this last round, the OnePlus 8 just got expensive. The OnePlus 8 regular, whether it's 12 gigs of RAM and 126 storage, that's 700. 12 gigs of RAM or 256 storage is, let's see, 800. 900 is the OnePlus Pro, OnePlus 8 Pro with 8 and 124. And the $1,000 phone is the OnePlus 8 Pro with 12 and 256.
Okay. So this one has, what's the price?
The price was, where'd it go? They haven't released it, but it was supposed to be, it's their cheaper phone.
Okay. So it's going to be cheaper than that $800 or $1,000.
Well, it's going to be cheaper than the $700 phone. So it's not going to be nearly as powerful. Based on leaked images, it's like 6.4, 6.5 inches. It'll still, so
it's kind of like what Apple did when they released that one phone that had like the colored backs, you know what I mean? And it was like a lot cheaper, but it wasn't that.
Apple, well, the OnePlus still has the colored phones, but yeah, it's kind of like that. So this will be their cheaper one. They're trying to go back to the regular cheap prices.
Yeah. I just brought up the colors, 'cause it was like,
yeah,
you know, you got your nice iPhones and they only come in like gold, gray, and black or something. But then they came out with these other ones that had like a neon green and yellow, and they were like meant for like, you know, more teenagers. It's like, I don't want to fork over $1,200 for my teenager to have the newest iPhone, but if they want an iPhone, I could pay, you know, $300-$400 for this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's cool. You know, I am interested in that. I just, you know, I use a lot of apps on my iPhone, and some of them I just realized that, you know, I can't use on my PC, and they don't have them. You know, like one of the apps that I use all the time for like note taking, and you know, when I'm watching a lecture, or even if I get like a PDF ebook, because sometimes I'll buy those from like private sellers, like mm-hmm. that write their own textbooks or something, and they kind of condense the information and the quick reference guides. Sometimes I'll get those in PDF form, and I'll open them in that app called Notability. And I like using that because you could also like, I mean, I use that to like, I used to use that when I was seeing patients in family practice and internal medicine. I like made my own little forms that I would fill out that I could easily type in someone's name and then check, hey, do you have a sore throat? Check no. You know what I mean? Like I could do these little boxes real quick, and I like that. And I have so much information on it, but you can't get that on Android or PC. And it's like, I have it on my iPhone. And then it's linked up to my iPad, which is also synced up with my MacBook Air.
Yeah, that's why I think that's one of the reasons why I kind of like the lack of loyalty I have, because I think we've had previous episodes where we talked about like, you know, the best apps for insert device, whether it's Windows, yes. Android, Apple, Linux, you know, insert something. And that's, I have to give it to Microsoft for their, because the note-taking app that I had, because I had an Android phone, an iPad, and Windows computer, three full different OSs, and they what I need needs to work on all three of them. Mm-hmm. And Microsoft did that great with Office and OneNote.
OneNote, yeah.
Like OneNote is really, really good if you're wanting to pay. What's the elephant one? Evernote?
Yeah,
Evernote. They're good, but it costs. Mm-hmm. So OneNote is the, you know, if you don't want to fork over lots and lots of money, OneNote is the best to be on everybody.
Yeah, you're right. Because I had to pay for Notability. I paid it for it for my iPad, and then it came phone one. But then I had to actually pay, you know, like I think I paid like $5 or something for it for my iPad, and it came with the iPhone one. But I had to like pay $15 or something to have it on my MacBook Air. But since I use it so much, I was like, yeah, I just got to have it on all three, because what if I want to look at something like that real quick? You know what I mean? Yeah. And sometimes your phone is just too small for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's only if you, that nice thing about that one, with Evernote, it's a monthly subscription. But nice thing about monthly subscriptions is usually they keep updating it. There's a lot more integration being brought in.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. And OneNote, though, you know, I wish I would have gotten on that bandwagon. I just never did, because a lot of people in my medical school used OneNote, and I was like, man, I should have, because that's across all platforms. Like, mm-hmm. even if I wanted to switch phones, that would be an easy one to just be like, hey, actually, you know, I wonder if I could import all my stuff from Notability into OneNote. I wonder if that's a possibility. I should look into that, because that is a good one to do, and I just haven't used it, but I'm guessing it has like all the tools that I like about Notability, you know.
And there is the paid version of OneNote too, because you still get quite, because all your storage is online, and everyone with their Microsoft accounts, I think it's like 5 megs or 5 gigs. I think it might be 5 gigs. It's not a whole lot, but it's an okay amount of free mm-hmm. storage. It might be 5 gigs, but you can honestly burn through it. And then
absolutely. I've burnt through my iPhone one. Just in pictures alone. I get a notification like every other day that says, hey, we're not able to back up all your stuff because you've maxed out the iCloud or whatever it is. And it's like, I'm just not going to pay for the extra storage, because, you know, I'm too lazy to just download that stuff and start over, because that's what I was doing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I take a bunch of pictures and I'd be like, okay, I'm not like thumbing through my 1500 pictures all the time. I should just dump those and mm-hmm. have them saved so I can go back to them. But I can start fresh now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And what's the other? Oh, also, with Microsoft, there's still a subscription. You subscribe to Office if you pay.
Yeah, Microsoft Office 365 or something like that.
If you don't have a student account, I think it's like $60 for the year, and that gives you a terabyte of online storage and all of the Microsoft Office stuff up installed on 5 devices, and $100 for a family plan. That means you get 5 installs and a terabyte, and 4 of your friends / family members also get 5 installs and a terabyte each.
That's nice. You know, that's not a horrible thing to do. I understand the, you know, you explained it really well, Bill. The idea of these monthly subscriptions, they're funding, you know what I mean? So that you can get up to date, so you can keep the security up. Because, you know, I'm still kind of old school in my mentality. It's like, I just want to buy Office. I don't want a subscription to Office. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. But I do understand what you're talking about. Because, you know, a lot of companies, I thought, were doing this because they're just trying to get a lot of money. And, you know, it's half and half, you know what I mean? Because they're making more money for sure. But they're also, as long as, you know, they keep things up to date and keep the product getting better and better, it's kind of like what we use in our offices is a lot of people use Dragon Speak, which is like this microphone that we use to dictate our medical notes, you know, and that it kind of sucked because when I was a student, I was like, you know, everybody uses this and I just wish that I didn't have to type this out. I wonder if they have like a student thing. And I contacted the company and they don't, but it's like $100, you know, or some odd $25 a month or something like
that. Oh, wow.
To have that. And now granted, you know, when you work at a hospital, typically they take care of all that for you and buy you your own license and pay for it. Yeah. But you know, if you want to use it at home or something, it's just kind of like, man, I'm SOL because I'm not going to pay that. You know what I mean? But I do get it though, because it's like the way that Dragon works now. I mean, I watch people use it and I'm like, wow, the words and the speech. I mean, we mumble a lot, you know, when we're trying to do stuff fast, and it's like, wow, this is really typing it out pretty dang good. Like, you know, you should be proofreading no matter if you're typing or if you're speaking, but it's doing a very, very good job of minimal errors. And I would like it to continue to get better. So that subscription, I kind of understand where that money goes now. That's it. That was a really cool way of explaining it.
And actually, OneNote's really good with that too. You write your notes. We all write differently. There's a lot of interpretation with it. And if you go in and you go, I'm going to write, you're going to tell me what to write, and I'm going to write it. And you're going to, the more I do this, the better you're going to get at my handwriting. So I can write for days and days. And because I spent all the time training you on my handwriting, you will translate it perfectly every time.
Yeah, that's freaking cool, man. That is neat. Yeah. Yeah, I'll definitely be thinking differently about those things now, because you really made a good point there.
Mm. And also, a lot of places like the subscription, because like right now, YouTube, the, you know, all advertisement, you know, giant thing of YouTube, they prefer you to subscribe, because right now, ads kind of are really sucking it up. No one's wanting to advertise. Yeah. But if you're a subscriber to their monthly YouTube premium, you're still paying and you're guaranteed money to help them out.
Uh-huh. And you don't get commercials when you subscribe then?
No, don't get commercials. I can download YouTube videos to my phone, and I get commercial free YouTube music, which I can download to my phone. And a couple of weeks ago, I don't know if this is a premium thing or not, you can upload your music to YouTube Music.
Interesting.
So all that music that people upload to Google Play Music, I went in, downloaded it all, turned around, uploaded it all to YouTube Music.
Wow.
It was work, yes. Cool. But
that's cool though that they're able to do that. I had no idea it's just kind of one of those things, man. It's like there's so much of that stuff. It's so hard to keep up on it, like on what things are really cool. And I've got to say that I'm not one of those people that looks for it. Like I got my Apple Music subscription and I was like, whoa, cool, I could just stream all this. And they're like, yeah, Spotify does that. And yeah, YouTube and Amazon and Google Play. And I'm like, cool, but I already have this and it works for what I'm doing. So I don't really care about anything else because I don't want to research it. You know?
And that's the thing, like the uploading the music, like I'd paid for a lot of these songs and they're not advertising that. Like I happened to run across it. And I was talking about I think it was the Geeks of Wireless episodes with Anthony. But there, it's something that's out there that nobody really talks about or no one even knows exists.
Man, that's crazy. They don't advertise it very well then.
Yeah. And they also, that's why all these music subscriptions are like $10 a month. Uh-huh. And what they're trying to do to make themselves better is like, we're a higher quality music subscription. Mm. And that's it, because they're not like TV shows or movies where it's like, oh, my company made this song and you only can get it through Spotify.
Right.
Like, really? No artist is going to do that, because they guarantee, they know they'll lose money in that.
Yeah, because they want to get it to as many people as possible, mm-hmm. period.
Yeah.
Like with Netflix and stuff like that, with things like Riverdale or like from the CW, it's like, yeah, well, we're making our money because we're also broadcasting this on live television that people subscribe to. Now we can make more money if we're like, hey, Netflix, we'll also let you stream it and when we're a week out after it's all out. You know what I mean?
And that's...
So, yeah, music doesn't really work that way.
Well, you can delay it, I guess. So you can go like, we're going to release on Apple Music first. And then we'll roll out. That's how podcasts are doing it, because podcasts have been, with RSS feeds and everything, they're available on everything, everywhere. And Spotify and Pandora are coming in, and all these other private companies are like, oh, we're just going to, you know, lock this in and you can only get through us. And podcasters, even those that walked into Spotify or Pandora, are like, yeah, that doesn't work, actually. We signed up for you. We understand, we get the paycheck, but we need that to push out eventually.
Right.
And because that's the, you know, no one's really holding it. And Pandora's really trying to lock it in more. I don't think podcasts ever will, but it'll be interesting. Like with us, we can get us on everything.
Yep. Wow. That's really crazy. Yep. Yeah. That's the politics behind some of that stuff is really interesting, because, you know, what is the solution, I guess? It's,
yeah. Well, but it being open to everybody is also really, really nice. Because that's why email fairly, you know, works fairly well. With everyone can have their own little platform. Yeah, Gmail kind of changed it, but it's still basically the same email. Yeah. Other email companies are like, well, we're going to change email. Yeah, you're not really going to do that much.
Or that make you go through a different system. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
You know, like when I was in medical school, ours didn't go through Google. It went through Outlook. You know?
Yeah.
And it used the Microsoft platform. But you can still share with everybody else. You can still email anybody.
Yeah. Well, and if you wanted to, you could have checked your email through Google still. It just would have been some of the security features. Same with your Gmail. If you want your Gmail to check it on Outlook, you can do that.
Oh.
Just you have to.
Because that's kind of how your phone works, you know, like Apple anyway. Like you log into your accounts and you're running it off of their system, but it's still your email from these other entities.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah, that's, yeah, man, all that stuff is intense.
All right, well, I think we've been going for a bit. We are gonna wrap things up for the time, for the moment, for the week, for this, the Geeks of Wired part. Does anyone have any famous last words?
You mean for episode 399?
399. Next week, that's it. Next week's going to be awesome, actually. Next week is our 400th episode.
Oh, my God. That's so cool. Are we going to party?
Yes, in our own houses, away from each other.
I know that Anthony's over there boozing it up.
But maybe we'll do a house party.
Famous last words, yeah. Hashtag graft life.
Hashtag road to 400.
I like that one.